Trigger warning. The following episode contains references to gore, racism, human suffering, death, factual inaccuracies, several entitled people making light of all these things. If any of the aforementioned topics cause you discomfort, you may want to listen to a different episode.
If you see two trains coming head-on towards each other, you better choose to stand further away. I'm Rick.
That photographer has a real eye for train disasters. I'm Andy.
If a train leaves Sri Lanka at 360 miles per hour, and a tsunami leaves the Indian Ocean at 500 miles per hour, where will they meet? I'm Adam.
Vlad, do you smell something?
I'm Sean, and welcome to Acid Pop. Hello, everyone. Step right up and get your tickets punched, because today we're going to be talking about trains. Adam and Andy, you guys should know something about trains, because Reno is sort of a big mecca for trains, and they got the train museum.
I know a few things about trains. One of them is that whenever you're trying to get across town as fast as possible, there will be one in front of you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that does happen.
I just took a long train ride this last summer.
Oh, good. Well, let's talk about that at the end.
I wanted to talk about it now.
Well, wait. So etymology of the word train comes from the Latin word trahere, which means to pull or draw.
Makes sense.
Which I thought was interesting. And it was translated into French as trahiner, and the masculine form of that word is train.
So it's just a straight up French word.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay.
Pretty much. The root of the word locomotive comes from Latin locus, which is location, and motivus, which is motive, which is kind of weird.
Comes from Mexican loco.
So that translated is to move by changing position.
Okay. Isn't that all movement?
Yeah. Yeah, it pretty much is. So, but, you know, we call trains locomotives, but I think back in the 1800s, pretty much anything that like wasn't alive and moved you from one place to another was a locomotive.
I think so.
So like a bicycle was a locomotive.
And if I wanted to be fancy, when you walk across the room, I could say it's locomotion.
Yeah, absolutely.
And then we could do the locomotion.
Yeah, then dance would burst out across the floor.
So there is a fear of trains. It's kind of a long one. Siderodromophobia.
Weird.
Fear of trains. And that can be the fear of trains crashing, or for some people, it's just the fear of not being in control of the thing that's compelling you forward, or being trapped in a train. There's lots of different expressions of siderodromophobia. But the root is kind of cool. It's from sidero, which is a Greek word for iron, and dromo, which is a Greek word for racetrack. So fear of the
racing iron. Oh, that's cool.
I know.
The fear of the iron racer.
So the first thing that we would probably call a train, you would look at it and be like, yeah, that's a train, was invented by George Stephenson, who was a British engineer, and it was in 1814. It was built to haul coal along a place called Killingworth Wagon Way. They just got tired of pushing wagons back and forth, so he built this little steam engine to power the wagons.
Killingworth.
Yeah, I don't feel safe walking along Killingworth's Way anymore.
And before that, they had steam engines that were just sort of like did other things, like pumped water, powered mills, that sort of thing. So, yeah, they were around before they were attached to wheels, which kind of interesting. Time for our acid pop quiz. So true or false, the miles of railroad track in the U.S. peaked in 1952.
Let's say true.
Yeah, I think that's probably true.
False.
Rick got it.
Ha.
Betrayer.
It was actually 1916.
Oh. Well then.
See, yeah. I would have thought an earlier date would have been more plausible, but.
Really?
Yeah. It's not the big fad it used to be.
Yeah, yeah, that's true.
Those popular trains, what a fad.
But in 1916, there were more than 250,000 miles of train tracks in the U.S. Do you know why?
Because railroad barons were rich and wanted to expand their holdings?
Nope.
Damn it. Well, I'm sure that's true as well.
Yeah, yeah, a little bit of that. Well, there was something kind of important going on in the 1916s.
the war.
Right. World War One. So when they were manufacturing everything, nothing's really better at moving stuff across land than trains. So they just built all kinds of tracks to move things to the factories and back and forth, including troops. True or false? Time zones are a result of trains.
True. Wait.
I agreed with Adam last time and I lost. So I'm going to say false.
See, last time it sounded true, but I wanted to say it was earlier.
Everyone knows Ben Franklin invented time zones so he could then invent daylight saving time and screw us all over.
I think it's false. I think it has something to do with farming.
Nope, it is in fact true.
Oh.
So on...
I don't have time to change my answer. I'm so lucky.
So in the late 1800s, they had trains that were running, you know, between places. But at that time, it was still pretty much that towns had their own time. You know, it only extended out as far as the town. And the next town over might have a different time. And it might be
what time,
you know,
to be
hours.
Alive.
Yeah. And so when they were driving from town to town, trying to make a schedule of like when trains would be where was almost impossible. So on October 11th in 1883, a group of railway representatives met for the General Time Convention, which sounds like a time traveler's convention. I really wish I could have been there.
It must have been hell to decide on when to meet.
Yeah, seriously. And they established four time zones in America. And they also, they talked about a fifth one, but they said not to go with it. But they added it in later. So on November 18th, about a month later, the railroads synchronized their times. So the railroads ran on specific times and they were set up on these time zones that they decided, but the rest of the US didn't get on board until 1918 was when it became law and everybody switched over to these time zones that the railway established.
Now that must have wrecked hell on people who had to work the next day.
Yeah.
So there was no time zones like in the world until this?
Well, the only other place, my research is limited here, but in Britain, Britain's so tall and thin that they didn't really need it. So everyone right. being on the same time was fine. But the U.S. was so big that, you know, on one end, the sun might not be up yet. And the other end, it'd been up for 3 hours. So, yeah, that was sort of where the idea came from. But as far as I know, the U.S. was the first to do that.
So the rest of the world had to do it, too.
Yep. That's how we
roll. Number one in trains. Yeah.
So true or false, it's safer to travel by train than by plane.
False. You put a penny on those tracks and that thing's just going over.
Yeah.
It just seems false. Too obvious. You know, like I'm gonna say false.
It is in fact true.
Damn it.
Planes have 0.5 deaths per billion miles of travel.
That seems pretty good.
That is good. Trains have 0.2 deaths per billion miles of travel.
Okay, it's not a competition, trains.
And that's just the ancient conductor having a heart attack.
Yeah, I should mention that is for accidents like specifically caused by trains. So like if you have a heart attack on a train, or more importantly, if you commit suicide by jumping in front of a train, that doesn't count. So
okay.
This is just accidents.
That statistic is probably higher than people jumping in front of airplanes.
Yeah, yeah. But cars, for comparison, have 4 deaths per billion miles of travel.
That makes sense.
Yep.
Because any schmo can drive a car.
Yeah.
It's pretty schmo.
So, short answer section. What is the current record for the fastest train?
600 miles per hour.
Holy cow.
It's a double bullet
That's
train.
That's true. There are those bullet trains.
You have a bullet train, and then you fire a second bullet train out of the first.
What is the speed of Mach 1?
I think it's 720.
Let's go with that, because that sounds really impressive.
I'm going to say 300 miles an hour.
No, Rick's the closest without going over. It was 362 miles per hour, or 584 kilometers per hour.
That was more than double.
Well, somebody needs to get on my super train then.
Yeah, I don't think I'd want to be on a train that broke the speed of sound. You know, planes are at least far away from stuff, and breaking the speed of sound creates a lot of shockwaves.
You'd be dead before you could hear your cry for help.
Yeah. But they do want to try to make bullet trains go to 800 kilometers per hour, which would be, that'd be like 450 miles per hour. That's the goal they're pushing towards right now, which that's crazy fast.
That is pretty fast.
What percent of freight is currently shipped by train?
Ooh, I remember hearing somewhere that it was like a, still a big number. I'm going to say 63%.
Majority.
I'm going to say 46.
I'm going to say 35.
Oh, Rick gets it again. It was 40%.
Who invited this guy?
You guys were surprisingly close. I had thought it was trains didn't hardly do anything anymore, that it was like 10% or 15%.
Rick is screwing up the curve.
You know, I was really going to say 40% until you said 46. I was like, that's too close. Yeah.
On April 28th, 1869, a group of railroad workers set the record for most miles of track laid in a single day. How many miles did they lay?
Good old John Henry broke through the mountain with his hammer.
Yeah, let's see. One man, two hammers.
It can't be too much, right? Seven. 7 miles.
Yeah, that's a lot.
I'm going to say 20.
Whoa. That's a lot.
I'm going to say 40 miles.
Whoa. Now, you guys are real optimists. It is, in fact, 10. So Andy was close to that going over.
Yay.
Which, you know, just to point out, I don't know that I could walk 10 miles in a day. So
no.
No, that's, sure you can.
That's a long way.
It is a long way. It's more than I want to walk in a day, but...
Oh, I used to do that every day.
Sure you did.
Uphill.
I don't know if he
both
did or
ways.
Not.
So that was laid by 8 Irish foremen and 4,000 Chinese
workers.
I've
heard this joke.
So yeah, they started at 5 in the morning and they worked until 7 in the evening. And they did this because Charles Crocker made a bet with Thomas Durant, and these are two railroad barons, that it could be done. And the wager was $10,000. So,
and the guy said, hey, Crocker, you're a real crockpot.
That's where it came from.
So Crocker won. The Irish workers got a parade, and the Chinese workers were forgotten by time because nobody cared.
The Irish workers got a parade, and the Chinese workers got to work some more.
Time to define some terms. When it comes to trains and other vehicles, they measure them in horsepower. But what is a horsepower?
Oh, it's the amount that one horse can... Damn it. It's...
can dream.
It's the amount that a horse can dream.
If it had wings.
I'm going to say it's how far a horse can drag a certain amount of weight in a certain amount of time, but I don't know that weight
sounds
or time.
Pretty scientific.
It's a certain amount of wattage. I can't remember the number off the top of my head. Let's guess 700.
700? I don't know how much is a lot of wattage. 200.
Well, I don't have the translation to wattage because when this unit was established, it wasn't... There wasn't electricity then, but you can translate it to wattage, but it is actually 550 foot-pounds per second. So the reason this came up is because there was a guy named James Watt, and he built what would largely be considered the first steam engine in 1775, and he basically needed a way to tell everybody how cool it was. So he had a horse power a mill for an hour. And then he measured how much force that horse used in an hour. And then he broke it down to a per second. And then he hooked his machine up to the mill and did the same test. And that first one could do basically double what the horse could do.
I see. But man, this seems like a flawed system of measurement then. What if it was a really weak horse?
Right. You know, it was just a horse that he found. So we don't have any other details. Yep.
Was it a workhorse?
I don't know. It's a horse. Neg. Yep, but 550 foot-pounds per second is a pretty precise measurement, so that is what horsepower is. All right, so what is bustitution?
That is my university for big-breasted women.
Ooh.
I was going to say it was like the paper that the country is founded on, that the breakdancers made for us.
A prison because everyone gets busted and it goes to it.
No, it is. In fact, these days, trains are still on the decline. So a lot of times train routes are replaced by bus routes. And when a bus substitutes in for a train, whether temporarily or permanently, it's called bustitution.
I see.
So it's portmanteau.
Well, that's not a very good portmanteau.
I liked it.
We were planning to go down to San Francisco once, and like they were like, okay, you could take a train down to this bus station, take the bus to the other train station.
Talk to a guy there. He totally knows how to get there.
So what is a go devil?
It sounds like a failed toy brand from the early 90s.
Why is anyone buying these?
The Go Devil is the thing that possesses people to play, to walk around and catch Pokemon.
Ooh, it's a disease.
I think it's a vacuum that has wheels that automatically move.
No, I want to change my answer. I think Andy's on the right track. It's an AR game sponsored by the church, and you exercise locations as you wander around town.
Yep, the first player to stand up and say, "Go, Devil," wins. No, a Go Devil is actually a hand-powered rail cart. So unlike the old movies when two people would stand on the thing and pump up and down. Like,
how come they never called them Go Devils in the movies? That's a wasted opportunity.
Seriously. Yeah, that's an awesome name.
I know, those look like so much fun too.
I know, right?
In the old movies, like, oh, let's get on the Uncle Spinny Dervish.
Though the actual, like, official Go Devil is a little different. It sort of looks like a rowing machine. So you sit down and, like, push back and forth instead of pumping up and down. But it's basically the same thing.
I've always wanted to go on one of those things, though. No matter, like, any design. Just like,
yeah, me too. That looks like fun.
It's probably fun for the first, you know, half a mile or so.
Yeah, I don't think I'd want to go very far, but just to say I had done it.
Well, I'll just get a real strong man on the other side, like Dwayne The Rock Johnson. Don't ask me how we both got stranded near the railroad tracks.
Sounds like a great movie, though.
Time for some stories. So I thought I'd start with some good old-fashioned train disasters. And I think I ordered this by casualties.
Sean ordered these train disasters. Take them out.
He's Mr. Glass.
So on June 4th, 1989, in the Iglinsky district in Soviet Union, a faulty gas line ruptured and leaked propane and butane in sufficient quantities that it basically made an explosive cloud that settled into this valley. And right at the bottom of the valley, a train ran through there. So it settled right on top of the tracks.
Ouch.
So it'd be bad enough if one train came by, because trains are full of sparks and fires and all kinds of things that could set off gas. But as it turned out, two trains passed each other at the exact same moment going through the cloud.
Waving at each other, "Hey, Jerry, I hope we don't explode today."
I think this math equation was on my last test.
So the dual exploding trains killed 575 people and injured 800 more. Ooh. And among the victims were 181 children on their way to vacation.
Damn it.
Yeah. And I had a note here about the blast was felt like 2 miles away or something like that. But I didn't write down.
I thought he had notes like, here's each of the children's names. Yeah. This is where they're vacation.
I felt the wail of lost children's souls 2 miles away.
So our next disaster. On December 11th, 1917, which again, World War I, a train left Galetti, France, and it was full of French troops and immigrants and locals fleeing the Germans, and all kinds of people were piling onto this train. So this train route went down a mountain, and as the train was approaching the last stop, the crew went to slow down and found out that the brakes didn't work.
Oh, no.
So, you know, they knew that this was going on, which kind of sucked. Like, they couldn't stop the train, so they're like, well, I guess we just ride this all the way down to the bottom. So the train just kept picking up speed, and, you know, they sort of told people, like, put your head between your knees and kiss your ass goodbye. And the train eventually came down to the bottom and went off the tracks and slammed into another parked train.
double trains in these disasters.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I mean, it's really the only thing that gets near the train tracks, so.
Yeah, not a lot of passing lanes on train tracks.
So this one killed between 800 and 1,000 people, though it's hard to say because, you know, people were just climbing onto this train. There wasn't really like an official manifest. Ugh. When they examined the wreckage, the speedometer was stuck at 95 kilometers per hour or 60 miles an hour. So they figured they were going at least that fast when they jumped off the tracks.
Oof.
Some people did survive. One of the survivors described the incident by saying, "I felt perfectly how the train jumped off the tracks like a monstrous reptile of iron and steel, pulling all of its travelers to mutilation of the great travel beyond.
Jeez.
I felt the feeling that I was thrown into the bottom of a pit, a rain of objects sliding around my body. How long was this torment? A few minutes, but to me it seemed interminable."
Man, wow. If only he got up to 88 miles an hour, he might have been able to jump into the future.
Yeah.
And that man was Charles Dickens.
So next, on December 26th, 2004, which, you know, again, a lot of these are really recent, which strikes me as odd, but trains, they don't crash very often. When they do, it's pretty spectacular. So anyway, a train left Colombo in Sri Lanka headed for Matera. So while the train was on its route, an earthquake happened off the coast and created a huge tsunami.
So this sounds really cool, like train escaping the tsunami.
Well, if
based
only.
On the casualty thing, I don't think that they're...
No, they're going to make it. I can see it.
So this was in 2004, so they had cell phones and things. So they knew that this tsunami was coming, so they decided to stop the train. And then there were three strategies. Some people thought that staying in the train was their best bet, and it would sort of cushion the blow, and they'd be okay. Some people went outside and stood on the opposite side of the train, thinking that the train would act like a big dam and like stop the water. And then some people climbed up on top of the train, thinking they'd be above the water when it finally came through.
I like each group is looking at the other group thinking they're all idiots.
You guys are dumb. This is the way it's going to work.
We will be the only ones on dry land.
Well, it turns out they were all wrong. So when the wave came through, the tsunami picked up the entire train and slammed it into houses along the side of the track. People inside drowned. People on top were thrown into the torrents. And people behind the train were crushed between the train and the buildings.
Yeah, I saw that last one coming.
Yeah. So the train came to rest 100 meters or 300 feet off the track, and it was estimated that the wave was 9 meters or 29 feet high that slammed into this train.
Yeah.
The casualties were estimated between 1,700 and 2,000 people.
I have a question. What would you have done if you were on that train?
I think I'd have gotten out and just started to run.
Yeah, just starting running inland.
Kiss my ass goodbye.
The farther I could get away from the coast, I think the better I would be.
Look for a mountain and try to run on top of it.
Yeah.
The first thought I had was to get on the side of the train that the wave is coming towards and try to hold on to a ladder or something on the side.
Wouldn't the water slam into you then?
Yeah, but I don't know how much force that.
Hey, you picked up a train.
I know, but I don't know.
My strategy is to run inland and loot as much as I can before I'm washed away.
And my plan is to grab my cushion, because it's a flotation device, and hold it tightly. And that was the worst train accident that I could find, thankfully.
The people standing on top of that train, they're like, you guys are all dumb. That wave can't be that high. If I was that guy, I was like, yeah, a bunch of idiots, and you turn around, there's a 27-foot wave, like, ow.
My best laid plans.
I guess I'm just imagining all the buildings being really far away from the train for some reason. Because
obviously not far enough.
Yeah.
It slammed into them.
Yeah.
Keep on saying slam, and all I can imagine is Macho Man Randy Savage. So this wave's coming up. Ooh, yeah!
He was riding on top of the tsunami on a surfboard.
It was the Macho Man tsunami, so. So in the late-ish 1800s, obviously trains were... picking up steam.
All aboard, huh?
The railroad barons wanted to lay a lot of track because they made money, but they didn't want to spend a lot to do it. So enter the Chinese immigrant labor force.
Thank God they came here to save the day.
Yeah.
Of their own free will.
The railroad companies realized they could pay them less, but work them harder. And so they started hiring them like crazy. At its peak, there were estimated to be 15,000 Chinese working on the railroads.
Whew.
So they were paid not a whole lot less than white people that worked on the railroads, just a dollar or two, which put them at about $35 a month, which in today's money would be about $553. Mm-hmm. But thing is, the Chinese had to pay the foreman for their food, lodging, and tools.
The white people had that
stuff comped to them.
Comped?
Yep. Yep. And in addition, the Chinese worked longer hours. They tended to work 11-hour days, 6 days a week, and they did the most dangerous jobs. So one of the jobs that they did was they would weave baskets themselves and then get in those baskets and be lowered over the face of a cliff with a bunch of dynamite. And then they would tamp a hole in the side of the cliff, stuff some dynamite in there, light it, and then yell at the people above, pull them back up before the dynamite went off.
God. Pull me up, pull me up, pull me up.
Can't we invest in longer fuses?
So for doing this work, they earned an extra dollar a month.
Jeez. Ooh. You move 16 tons and what do you get?
I understood that reference.
In 1867, the Chinese labor force decided they had enough, and so 5,000 workers went on strike. And their demands for being on strike was that the wages were raised to $40 a month, or $632 in today's money, and the work days were shortened from 11 hours to 10 hours.
And that and less dynamite carrying.
Well, yeah, if they were doing the dangerous jobs, they didn't have to do it for more than 8 hours at a stretch. So these were their demands. So the railroad barons said, well, nuts to that. And since the Chinese workers got all of their food from the railroad, they just stopped feeding them.
Screw you guys. We'll find a more appreciative minority.
Where's the Irish?
This was a completely non-violent strike, so the Chinese just sat quietly and hoped that things would go their way. So after about 8 days of starving them, the railroad workers came back with the local sheriff and a bunch of people that had been deputized solely for the purpose of intimidating and punching Chinese workers and basically said, we're just going to beat the snot out of you until you go back to work. So the Chinese quietly went back to work.
Is it against the law to not work on the railroad?
If you have enough money, it is.
Oh, my.
So, yeah, that was the failed Chinese worker strike.
Oh, they were taking advantage of the no loitering laws.
But you won't be loitering if you start working on the railroad. Do you know that law is still on the books, Adam? Right now it is illegal for us not to be working on the railroad.
Oh, that song was a command.
So for our final story, I thought I'd share what I thought was the most interesting train crash. So in 1896, the failing Missouri, Kansas, and Texas Railroad Company, or the CATTY, they decided that they needed a spectacle to raise publicity. So they decided to take a couple of their oldest, heaviest trains and a handful of carriages that were slated for retirement and stage a head-on collision.
Nice. Pretty cool.
So tickets were sold, and they cost between $1 and $3.50, depending on, you know, where you bought your tickets for. And the spectators lined the edge of a valley, and the train tracks basically dipped from both ends of the valley and, you know, met in the middle. So people weren't allowed within 150 yards of the danger zone, which, you know, that's 450 feet from ground zero.
That's still pretty dangerous, I think.
Is this later where they established the highway to the danger zone?
Maybe. They wanted to make sure that the trains were going as fast as possible when they hit. So they started the trains 2 miles apart. Two conductors got them rolling, basically locked down the accelerator, and then jumped off the trains. They accelerated down the valley and met in the middle. Now, at this point, there had been several train accidents already, and they'd actually done a test of this a few weeks before. And what usually happens when two trains hit is they sort of V up together. They make like a V shape and then sort of crumple back to the ground.
Okay.
But this time, for whatever reason, because they were going so fast or because they were running so hot, they hit each other and exploded. A rain of debris fell on and tore through the 10,000 spectators and journalists.
Oh, no.
The danger zone is bigger than expected.
Much bigger. A 10-pound section of brake chain nearly cleaved this man's head in two, which killed him instantly. Another chunk,
Twain in that period.
Another chunk of iron hit a farmer's daughter and fractured her skull, and she died. Three people died in the incident, which, honestly, all things considered, isn't that bad. But then another man survived the accident, got on a train to go home, and then while walking between carriages, slipped between and got crushed underneath that train.
Well, that's not the intentional train accident's fault.
No, but it just the irony.
Oh, thank God I escaped that train. Ah!
They got me anyway.
Man, how many people's ears were like blown out from that? It must have been so loud.
Yeah, it was immensely loud. And there was also a guy and his two brothers were there taking pictures.
Two brothers.
One of the brothers took a piece of metal through the eye, which lodged in his brain. And his last words before he passed out were to tell his brothers to keep taking pictures.
He's a pro.
Yeah. And then he passed out, but he actually lived. So good for him.
He was insane in the membrane, insane in the train.
After all this, there actually wasn't all that much public outcry, and it turned out to be a really good thing for this railroad company. Everybody wanted to ride the train that was audacious enough to stage a deliberate train accident.
That's how the Demolition Derby started.
So they soared back into business and were in business for another almost 100 years. They finally closed in 1988.
We killed some folk. Yeah, hop aboard.
Ride the train line that's only killed three people.
So where are the pictures that this guy said to take?
Oh, there are some pictures online, but they're not great because they're with, you know, late 1800s cameras. So they're blurry black and white pictures. There's one of the trains like about to hit, and then there's just a bunch of the people running.
And then just a bunch of carnage.
Yeah, yeah, basically.
With your 0-megapixel camera.
So that was all the stories that I had. Anyone have any personal train anecdotes?
See, the only trains I took a train in Japan. It's mostly like subway trains.
Yeah.
But when I was a kid, I remember being like, my sisters used to watch Fried Green Tomatoes a lot.
Uh-huh.
And if you've ever seen that movie, two or three people get run over by trains.
Oh, yeah.
And I'm like, when that. I was a kid, I was like, oh, my God, trains will just sneak right up on you.
They bury that kid.
That's what Stand By Me taught me.
That's what Wrongfully Accused taught me.
And to this day, I still maintain that Fried Green Tomatoes is a movie about train safety.
I just took a train ride from Reno to Denver this summer.
Oh, yeah?
It's the first, like, prolonged train ride I've ever done.
Yeah.
It was interesting. It's nice because it's like airplane seating, but you have a lot more room and there's outlets and stuff next to you. So you can actually like plug stuff in and it's pretty comfortable, but it was also like kind of trashy.
Oh, really?
Like just the people around me also taking advantage of the cheaper train prices.
Yeah. Yeah.
Talking about how her husband was getting out of jail soon and he still loved her, even though there was violence issues.
And when I took Adam to get on the train, we showed up an hour early because we expected it to be like airplane security.
Yeah.
Adam goes inside. I start driving home and I get a text 2 minutes later. I was like, yep, I'm on the platform. So
yeah, like there was no security.
Yeah. Yeah. My wife, she loves trains. I don't know why, really. But yeah, she didn't ride her first train until we rode the L in Chicago, which doesn't really count. That was, I don't know, maybe 10 years ago. But yeah, she really likes trains. So a couple years ago I think it was for Valentine's Day, we took the train from Seattle up to Vancouver. So, I mean, not only was it regular security, but it was also international security. And it was same thing. I basically like walked up. I'm like, I'm here for the train. They're like, oh, what? Oh, fine. Yeah, just go stand over there. And that was it.
What are you talking to me for?
They glanced briefly at my passport and then just waved me onto the train.
I don't think they care until they come and check. Like on the train or when you're getting on the train?
Yeah, then they throw you off.
Well, no. Once I was on the train, they just brought me a piece of paper that was just like, oh, write down any, you know, declarations that you have.
They did that for me too.
And I just gave it to them and that was it. So, but yeah.
Oh, and I remember at one point in my train ride, I was walking through the observation car and they had brought on a couple people from like the parks department or like the National Park Service or something. And I was just sort of wandering through at the time and the gist that I got was it's basically just an old guy talking about the river. And like the snippet that I caught was he was saying something like, well, and here's where the president, he was fishing here once. And then a young boy, he came and asked him what kind of fish he was getting. And that young boy was me. And I still remember it to this day.
What kind of fish was it?
I don't know. I wasn't listening that closely.
And Adam saw a bunch of butts.
I saw so much nudity on that train ride.
Wow.
It's because we were going past the Colorado River and everybody like rafting and stuff and camping on, along the shore, flashing tops and bottoms and all sorts of things.
It's a compulsion.
I thought you were just going to leave it there. Like that was all we needed to know. It's like, well, I went past the Colorado River and we would always go,
you know.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yep.
But like I don't even know what you call them. It's not a stewardess on a train. Maybe they're all conductors. I don't know. But somebody got on the PA system and had to like
shield
tell people
eyes.
Like, hey, if you're going to get offended, don't look out any windows.
There's willies and wanguses out there.
Yep. When we took the train up to Vancouver, it's nice. Like you were saying, it's comfortable and a little more space than a plane. And they have a restaurant, which you can go and just eat at, you know, whatever
and
you want.
Buy super expensive food.
Yeah. I was a little disappointed in that just because like, you know, it's like, oh, go have a meal on a train. But it's basically just like a McDonald's kiosk.
Yeah,
and you
get
like
a
really, really crappy frozen food that costs about 8 times as much as it should.
It's overpriced because you're trapped.
Yeah. Yeah. And when our train went, basically for whatever reason, the commuter train is like the least important train on the tracks. So you said there's no such thing as a passing lane, but in this one, there in fact was a passing lane. So every—
I was being facetious. There are a few passing lanes.
But yeah, every, I don't know, a couple of miles, there's just a little spot where the train, one train can pull off the track so that another train can go by. And that train was always us. So on the driving to Vancouver, it takes a little over 3 hours. And I think taking this train took about four. And all said and done, it was like a little bit cheaper than flying. But like, considering how much longer it took, it really wasn't any savings at all.
Yeah, my ride from here to Denver was 24 hours.
Oh, wow. It just never stopped.
Well, and then on the way back, like, there's some sort of issue with the track or the train. I wasn't really clear on that, but it seemed like we had somebody had to like get out and like kick the tracks or something.
ding, ding, ding. So
we were slowed way down for a long time. I think we ended up being like 6 to 12 hours behind schedule.
Wow. I did have a very minor bad thing happen on a train when we were in London last year. So when you go to London, you know, they've got the underground, and basically like there's a whole bunch of different lines and every line gets its own level. So like you might go down to one track and be like, oh, this isn't our train. And so then you go down like three more stories underground.
And like, we belong in the Underdark.
Yeah. And so like we went to the very bottommost train. So we were like, I don't know, a dozen stories underground. And
the mole people driving it.
Yeah, you could feel it. Like it just felt clammy and close and wet. Like it felt like being in a very deep cave.
All the heavy gases settling.
Yeah, yeah. Like it was, it felt like the air had been down there forever. Like it hadn't been refreshed since. It
sounds kind of terrifying.
Yeah, it is a little terrifying. And then the train pulls up and we all get on and it's going along. And then all of a sudden, all the lights in the train just go off.
And the scream rings out.
And the train just starts to coast. And it just slowly starts rolling along. And there's like emergency power. And the guy comes on. He's like, yeah, they're running a lot of trains today. And they all run on electricity. So every once in a while, the trains just run out of power. So we ran out. So we'll just have to wait a while until the power comes back on. And the train took forever to coast to a stop without the brakes. Like we were coasting for what must have been 15 minutes. And by the end, we were going like, you know, so slow, you could barely tell the train was moving. And then finally, just went like chink, clunk, and it came to a stop. And then we just stood there for like, I don't know, 5 to 10 minutes, just like looking around at each other. And I'm like, I'm totally fine. Like the people know we're here. If this train doesn't turn back on, they'll just come down and get us. No big deal. But I'm looking around at the other passengers like, but are these people okay? How long can they be cooped up down here before one of them snaps and starts tearing around this train?
I'm sorry, folks. The power's gone out. Don't worry. If there's a murder, we do have Poirot on retainer.
Sean's looking around, sizing everyone up.
Yeah. But luckily, everyone was very British and polite. So we just waited quietly until the train started going again.
Yeah, the only train I've taken was in Japan, and when we had to get to the airport to Tokyo.
Mm-hmm.
And I'll tell you what, the first time you take that train, when you're just get off the airplane and you're fresh faced and one, it's wonderful. The second time, when everybody goes, we're leaving Japan, let's go do karaoke and drink all night. Trains are loud.
Yeah, yeah.
And when you have we have a mutual friend, Sean Justin.
Mm-hmm.
Apparently he gets motion sick on trains if he's been drinking all night.
Oh, well, yeah.
I imagine that raises the risk.
There's very few bathrooms on a train, so imagine this young man all of a sudden turning green several times and running up and down the train going, trying to open doors.
Haven't you, Rick, ever been on a train?
Yeah, when I was a little kid, it was just like one of those, it was like 2 miles of a trip. It was just to be on a train in Yuma.
Yeah.
But my probably most relevant train story is just that I hear them every night because I live not too far away from train tracks.
Oh yeah.
And they'll blast their horns really loud, and they tend to do it more at night and for longer. And it can be really annoying sometimes if you don't have like a fan on or things to kind of mask sound.
Yeah. Well, I mean, they're doing that to alert people, and certainly you need to do that more at night than during the day. So
I wish they'd stop and just run them over. Who cares?
Though actually
get off the track.
This isn't exactly a train story, but that reminded me the first time I ever took a train. I don't remember this, but I was like 3, I think. And I took a trip with my mom in Chicago and we took a train, and it was me being inadvertently racist. So I'd grown up in Reno my whole life, and Reno does not have a lot of diversity. Like there's some Spanish people there, but that's about it. Mostly everybody's white. And I went to Chicago for the first time.
We do okay for ourselves here.
And I went to Chicago for the first time, which is a very diverse city. And my mom took me on the train, and apparently we were getting on. And I looked around and I said, look at all these chocolate people. And my mom just like tackled me to the ground and covered my mouth.
That's okay. Grab him. Me too.
Yeah.
I was a kid.
Get him. At least I didn't say anything bad. I was just fascinated.
I said it directly to the people, though.
Oh, really?
Like these people that were going to take my, or that were going to move into the house my dad was selling. And I was like, these people look like chocolate, or they're made out of chocolate. I've actually thought they're made out of chocolate. And,
yeah.
But they were gracious. Like they laughed, and you know, they were nice.
All right. So time to play. What are your morals worth? So we've heard a bit about what the Chinese workers had to endure to, you know, get the railroads laid. What would I have to pay you to do that job for a month?
The hanging basket one specifically?
Let's say you have to do that twice over the course of the month. And the rest of the time, you're just digging trenches, hammering. Oh, crap. What are they called? The big spike things. Yeah, just doing very hard physical labor. And remember that a portion of your wages have to go towards the rental of your tools.
I would have to be paid more than the Chinese railroad workers.
More than $533 in a month?
Yeah.
Okay, I'm looking up here. I'm going to be taking underwater welder's wages.
Isn't that a very high paid job?
So you're going to have to be paying me $95,000 a year.
All right, so divide that by 12. That's about $8,000 a month.
That seems fair, I guess. Yeah, I'll undercut Andy. I'll go with $7,000.
Yeah, and I suppose you could classify this as unskilled labor, but only the skilled get to make it back from the basket.
Yeah, yeah.
And I have to learn how to weave baskets.
Yeah, do I have to weave my own basket?
No, you just trust that you won't fall off a cliff in a basket someone else weaved.
Okay. Because I've done jobs similar to that before. I've hung off the side of ships where it's basically just a board with a rope through it.
Yeah.
And one guy up top holding it.
One very distracted, seasick man.
Yep.
So is this the sort of situation where you need the work, or where you have work and you just take like a month off and do this?
You just take like a month off.
Maybe I'd do it for 8,000.
It's the same as Andy?
Yeah. $8,000.
All right. Well, let's see. I don't know.
I'm going to get hired before you.
I don't know how much it costs to rent this stuff, but like, let's just say the housing. If let's say they give me a discount. And
let's
maybe
talk benefits.
It's $1,000 a month for housing. And then food, that's probably a couple hundred. And tools, let's say $1,500 is probably going to go just so I can work. So I'm going to tack that on top. So what would I need? If I had $8,000 at the end of the month, would that be enough?
$8,000 is pretty nice. Less. I mean, that's roughly $266 a day.
Yeah, yeah, that's pretty good. All right, I'll do it for $7,500. So that's $1,500 for my tools and then $6,000 for me walking away at the end of the month.
Hired.
Sean undercut you.
Yeah.
He didn't? Well,
I suppose he didn't.
There's another benefit that you would get from this. At least I would. I mean, it probably wouldn't matter for you. Is that I would probably lose a lot of weight and get in shape and everything like that. So it'd almost be like a camp, you know, like, oh, yeah. I'm going to go do this and get a life experience and lose 50 pounds, you know?
I mean, I'd lose some weight, but I don't know how much fingers weigh.
Yeah. You're going to lose a lot of weight when one of your arms gets blown off.
I didn't think about the dynamite aspect of it. Probably a bit more now that I think of that.
Too late. We've already signed the contract.
Oh. Off to the railroad with you.
Wait, so everybody got hired? I could have made more money?
All right. Well, it looks like this is your stop. So thanks for tuning in, and we'll see you next week. Thanks to my co-hosts, and thank you so much for tuning in today. If you would like more information about today's episode, check out our website at acidpoppodcast.podbean.com. You can also find us on Twitter at acidpoppodcast and contact us at acidpoppodcast@gmail.com. Be sure to like, subscribe, and give us all the stars you can. Stay safe out there, and we'll see you next week.